Jill Meredith Wolf, 36 years old. Today is October 29th, 2015, and I'm at the Chicago Cultural Center with my friend and colleague, Karina Dan.
Karina Dan, 45 years old. Today is October 29th, 2015, and I'm here at the Chicago Cultural Center with Jill Wolf, my friend and colleague.
Hey, Karina. I'm so glad to have you here in Chicago. Welcome home.
Thank you. It is great to be back in Chicago.
The Windy City, especially today. Yes. What brings you back to Chicago today?
Well, I'm presenting at the Association of Nurses in AIDS Care on hepatitis C, an issue close to my heart.
Yeah, mine too. We met around hepatitis C about 14 years ago.
We did.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like it's been that long.
No, it went poof. So what's your mission with Hep C? Why are you here to talk to nurses and AIDS, or why Hep C?
That's a great question. So the way I see it, we have as many as 3.9 million people in the United States chronically infected with hepatitis C. And when I started working on this issue in about 2001, just before we met, it was very frustrating. There weren't very many resources. And I wondered when we would start to take this issue seriously, since so many people are infected, since we have the ability to prevent infections, we have treatments that can help people. And back then I thought, maybe when we have new treatments that work better, or maybe when we have better screening recommendations for hepatitis C, maybe then we can start to take it seriously. It didn't happen, and along the way I wondered, you know, maybe if more people died of hepatitis C, or if we realized that it was still an ongoing problem,
cancer,
we would take hepatitis C seriously. And now things have gotten to the point where we have a safe and effective cure for hepatitis C. We have new screening recommendations for hepatitis C. We have death rates from hepatitis C that are increasing. In fact, they're higher for hepatitis C than all other infectious causes of death combined in the U.S. And we've seen a 150% increase in new hepatitis C infections. And that's mostly among young people under age 30. I think now is the time to take hepatitis C seriously. And so I'm really excited to present to the nurses this week. I'm also presenting at the American Public Health Association meeting next week.
And you're like, I mean, from 14 years ago to today, I mean, you're kind of a bigwig. I mean, not that you weren't a bigwig then. You know, you were, nurses, of course, are totally awesome, and you are, of course, one. But when I met you, you worked for the Department of Health. And now you work for the government.
I do. I work at the Department of Health and Human Services.
Amazing.
I am the only viral hepatitis policy advisor. I have the honor, really, of working at this on this issue at the national level. And it's been a really exciting experience. And what's really exciting now is the momentum that's building with hepatitis C. When I started at the health department in 2001, you know, I had this opportunity to build a new program. There was no hepatitis prevention program at the health department. So I got this great chance to work internally at the health department with, you know, training staff and trying to find ways to offer more services to the appropriate populations. And then externally, I got to work with community-based organizations like the organization you were working at, others, substance abuse treatment programs, outreach programs, groups that were really trying to make a difference for populations that were already, you know, individuals who were already infected with hepatitis C or prevent hepatitis C in people who didn't have it yet. And that was so gratifying to have, to build those relationships, to raise awareness at the city level. And I did that for 7 years. But after 7 years, I looked around and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I don't know what more I can do here in Chicago. I feel like there's not leadership at that time in Washington, D.C., that there weren't people, I didn't know about anyone going up to Capitol Hill and educating lawmakers and talking with the leadership at Department of Health and Human Services to say, hey, this is going to be a crisis. Mm-hmm. I mean, we need to do something about hepatitis. And so I made the decision with my family, and I have the support of my husband, to my kids, to move to the D.C. area and work on this issue. And so I had the chance to do that. I moved in 2007. And it's kind of funny. I was doing advocacy for a few years, working for nonprofit organizations, and they came out, the federal government came out with this draft plan, Viral Hepatitis Action Plan. Hmm. And we had the chance, as the community, they shared it with us for review and, you know, what did we think of it? And they tried to incorporate some of our thoughts. And after we saw it, and I was joking around with my colleagues, like, you know what they need? They need a coordinator for this. You know, somebody who can work internally with the people at HHS and people, you know, and externally with partners like the organization you work with now. And I
created your own job.
Yeah.
I followed up with my boss, my current boss at the time, and Dr. Ron Valdeseri.
Who is?
Deputy Assistant Secretary for Health, Infectious Diseases at the Office of the Assistant Secretary for Health at HHS.
Say that three times in a row.
And I said, you know, I'm just really interested in working with you. And this is my experience. I'm a nurse. I understand the disease part of it. I understand the advocacy part of it. And I've been working to educate people to, you know, do the right thing now. I would like the chance to work with you. And it took a while, but I was able to join this office at HHS. And it's so I joined in 2011. I've been doing this for 4 years now.
Well, you're a trailblazer, as hopefully you know that. But as an advocate, still sort of where I am and happy where I am, I hope you know the beacon of light that you are for the advocates across the country in the position that you sit and that you created, really. So big shout out to Ron. Thanks, Ron, for knowing, you know, a gift when one's brought to you. But I hope that you know what it feels like as one person, one advocate in a state, say like Illinois, in a city, say like Chicago, to be able to leverage someone like you who gets it on the ground, but can actually make change happen. So thank you, Tom, and your kids for letting you move to DC, or letting you, encouraging or supporting. So I hope you know that, Karina, that you are that beacon of light for many of us.
Thank you so much, Jill. That's part of what keeps me going. I mean, we've got something like 4 million people in the U.S. chronically infected with hepatitis C. And there's so many things we could be doing. Kind of I feel like there's so little that I do. But I feel very strongly that with the number of groups and individuals currently engaged on this issue, we can only take it so far. We can only move the needle so far. We really need to get to more people who are infected but don't know it. We need to get them tested and engaged on this issue. I mean, once you learn about the scope, about how many people, about the fact that we're really not doing all that we could be doing to test them, to, you know, increase awareness in communities that have a lot of hepatitis C, it sparked something in me. Yeah. I developed the passion for this. And so I see the need to continue to engage with all kinds of groups and to reconnect with people on the ground. I mean, I work in Washington, D.C., it's very far removed mm-hmm. from people who are being impacted. It's far removed from real people's real lives on streets, in homes, across the nation. And so it's always so helpful for me to hear some of the stories that you've recorded on StoryCorps, but also, you know, real life stories from people who are doing this work.
And with that, Karina, I mean, to tell you about what's going on in Chicago, your home, we're not doing great in terms of Hep C, in terms of addiction, in terms of our heroin issue. And what fascinates me, and to bring it home, and however this hits you, but, you know, Illinois is the most, I say that Illinois is the poster child of the state not to live in if you have hepatitis C and Medicaid. As you know, we are the most restrictive as it relates to access to curative medications. We require our patients to develop cirrhosis before they can get access. And of course, they have to be sober for X amount of time, and it's a bunch of hoops. That's one piece. The second piece is our heroin and our opiate addiction issue is across the nation is terrible. But there's certain pieces in Chicago and Illinois that make us quite unique. And there's a report that was just put out called Diminishing Capacity that highlights that. And what it shows is that we have the largest decrease of treatment, substance abuse treatment bed accessibility, and one of the largest opiate heroin issues. And when we look at this young group you were talking about of 18 to 24-year-olds under 30, it's not just the baby boomers and these people who have been living with Hep C for years, and we have an opportunity to cure them, but we have an opportunity to prevent with these youth. And our state, I feel like it's so frustrating being an advocate that we are setting our kids and our system up by these various issues. And heroin is what right now is... and opiates are perpetuating this virus. I'm wondering if people in government that you interact with, I know on the ground they are experiencing the heroin issue at their own homes, but that's not necessarily brought into, or how much is it brought into this government
place? That's a great question.
So
the good news is that the heroin and opiate epidemic is a priority at the Department of Health and Human Services. It's one of the secretaries, Secretary Burwell's priorities. And she has taken some steps in the recent past to try to address parts of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
We know that this issue is also on the radar of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Congress mandated that a national heroin task force be convened. And our office, myself and Dr. Valdeseri, were members of that national heroin task force. So we carried some of those messages because you're right, these are intersecting epidemics. They're, you know, affecting each other. And they we can't address any of them without addressing all of them at some level, right? So we heard just, I think it was last week, that President Obama made a big announcement about expanding capacity to provide substance abuse treatment to individuals. That's because of the opiate epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
And there is an increasing awareness, I think, about the connection between opiate addiction, injecting drugs, and hepatitis C, as well as HIV, as we saw in the recent Indiana HIV and hepatitis C outbreak. Most people hear about the HIV, but they don't hear about the
92%
co-infection rates with HIV and Hep C among those people that they identified in Indiana. So, you know, the places where it's happening in the U.S. are also appear to be the places where there is diminished capacity, or there maybe never was capacity or that infrastructure. That, you know, this is a very different epidemic than what we historically saw with hepatitis C, where it was mostly in urban areas and among minority populations with the new Hep C infections. They're young. They're primarily white. Mm-hmm. They're equal parts male and female. It used to be that there were more men injecting, and now we see both genders.
And
injecting.
There's a shift in drugs usage too, which the type of drug.
Yes.
Which is a huge impact on other costs and other implications within the system.
Right. So to get back to your question, I think that a lot of this has hit the national radar, and that some specific steps have been taken, but it's very clear that we need to do more. One thing that's been helpful, I think, is leadership at the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration urging substance abuse treatment programs to educate around hepatitis C and test for hepatitis C, or if not possible to test there, refer out, but to increase all of their activities around hepatitis C, because we know that's the population that where we really need to prevent new infections and then diagnose early and get people the care and the treatment that they need.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that eradication of this is possible, maybe in our lifetime?
Oh, I don't know about the time limit. I think it's possible, yes. We have a cure,
yes,
for hepatitis C. So within our lifetime...
I mean, I plan to live a pretty long time. I don't know about you. You got to be in your position for a long time.
I think we can work toward that. I definitely think that a lot more is possible in this field. But I'm not so sure of the time frame. I think it'll take longer.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's really hard to get all of the necessary parties together and coordinating and collaborating. And let's face it, we're in a time now of limited resources. And the issue specifically of hepatitis, we don't have the kind of community mobilization that we've seen that has really done a lot for other disease states like HIV/AIDS, which has an enormous support infrastructure, people that have been working on this issue and really made things happen in the field of HIV/AIDS in the 80s and in the 90s. Heart disease is another one, breast cancer. We need to build that, yeah, for hepatitis C. And that's part of why, our work on the National Viral Hepatitis Action Plan is really, in many ways, a framework for action on this issue. We updated this action plan in 2014. We also have a companion document, which is called a stakeholders workbook, to try and help organizations that are working with populations at risk or in areas where they want to do something more about hepatitis, to help them to plan, and to plan in a way that leverages what we're doing at the federal level and helps them to, adopt the, current recommendations and best practices. Because that's what we really need to do, is to, expand the implementation of testing recommendations and treatment recommendations, and then find people who are doing this really well and document that. Like, how are they doing it really well so that other people can do it that well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I'm going to. You are an advocate at your heart, and you were once, your job was an advocate. And your title, there's only one Karina Dan, literally and figuratively. And you are an advocate, but that's not your title right now. So as you look at me, imagine that you see all of the advocates that their title is that across the country. What message do you have for us? Because there are not enough of us, but there are a lot of us. What message from where you sit, knowing that we have these tools like the action plan, and it certainly takes more than tools to make things happen. But what message do you have for us across the country who want to make some change and sitting where you sit and having come from where you come? Is there anything that you might want to share with us as bold or blunt or whatever it is you are allowed to be, I suppose?
Sure, sure. So I think the first message is we need you. We need you and you and you and more individuals who are committed to this issue and advocates who care and who use their time and energy to move this issue forward. We've gained some momentum, but we're certainly not where we need to be when it comes to addressing hepatitis C. I think you need to be creative, but evidence-based. Mm-hmm. When we receive inquiries or requests that include, you know, strange numbers or overblown expectations or suggestions, you know, it's difficult to take those kinds of requests seriously. I think that it helps to learn how the system works or how it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And I knew nothing about how to change things at the level that I really wanted to change things at for viral hepatitis until I moved.